Hi, I'm Raoul Pal, co-founder and CEO of Real Vision. Thank you so much for listening to the Real Vision podcast. At Real Vision, we pride ourselves on providing the best in-depth expert analysis available to help you understand the complex world of finance, business, and the global economy. If you like what you hear, I hope you'll accept my invitation to try Real Vision Plus for 30 days for just $1. Visit realvisionpodcast.com today and join us as we navigate the financial world together. Cheers.
As the health food craze grows, we're going to see a lot more mini robotic drones. Welcome to the Knock-On Effect. This is the Knock-On Effect, where we start with a thing you know and end up in a strange place. I'm Justine Underhill.
I'm Alex Schesbrick.
And we're going to get you from point A, health food trends, to point B, mini robotic drones.
Oh, that ain't point B. That's probably point X. Yeah,
point Z. It's a circuitous route, but we will get there. And today we're going to start with the health food craze. And basically, I mean, Alex, you can tell us a little bit more about what's been happening in the health food craze because you're a big part of it, right?
Oh, I'm a huge part of it. I'm the, in terms of health trendsetters.
You're at the forefront?
Yeah. I mean, it's basically who are the health food people these days?
I don't even know.
Like Tim Ferriss talks about health.
Exactly.
Tim Ferriss and me, the two titans of podcast health.
So
healthery.
You've been on a fancy diet.
I'm on what's called the keto diet,
also known as the bacon diet.
Yes, it's keto. It's ketogenic. You know, basically, it's you're not supposed to eat sugars and carbs, and you're supposed to keep your fats pretty high. So it's not like restrictive. Like you can't eat this, but you're supposed to keep your carbs below a certain level. Keep your proteins above a certain level, and you can use fat to compensate if you need more food.
And a big part of what you just said is that you got to keep your sugars towards...
Oh, forget it. You can't with the sugar.
Yeah, it's hard to get rid of sugar. But, I mean, and that's been a big thing, is that most diets, I mean, sugar, understandably, has been demonized in many ways. And people are looking for no sugar added, low sugar foods. And so the beneficiary of that is honey. Now, honey
isn't necessarily
better. I mean, and you still can't eat it, but it
tastes better, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, okay. So there's something to do with that, but and the flavors. But honey's become sort of this organic, healthful food that people, it has some sort of halo effect.
Yeah.
So you can still, a company can still get away with adding sugar and making it taste desirable, but basically using honey instead.
Honey's a lot more, it's more interesting, it's more flavors, it's a nicer word, it's less, you know, chemical kind of a word.
Sugar.
It's pretty.
Yeah, and so that's why, I mean, there's so many products. I went to the grocery store, and there's honey yogurt, and honey protein bars, and honey teas, and everything like that. I mean,
I was in Burlington, and I bought a raw honey protein bar.
Okay.
I convinced myself I was able to eat.
Right. Somehow. But guess what? You're not going to see a raw sugar protein bar anytime soon. So there definitely is a trend towards honey in some ways. And it's not for nothing that Kellogg changed the name of its cereal Sugar Smacks to Honey Smacks.
Right. One sounds like a drug. Another sounds like a domestic violence case, but
Honey Smacks? Kind of. Sugar Smacks, I'll agree with, though. That sounds pretty bad. And so that's what's been happening, is that global demand for honey has been expanding rapidly as consumers are increasingly...
Honey Smacks. It's like, no, Your Honor, they were just Honey Smacks. You know? it was just a love bite. You know, you remember that?
Anyway, no.
Knicks announcer.
Who, oh, gosh. So the point of the story, why we got into all this... is that global demand for honey is expanding rapidly as consumers are increasingly looking for natural alternatives to cane sugar and artificial sweeteners. Yes. So that's sort of where we stand. So on the one hand, we have increasing demand, if you can picture that in your head. And then on our other hand, we have supply. So what's been going on with supply? Well, over the past decade, beekeepers have been experiencing dramatic colony losses, with average bee losses of 24 to 30%.
Sounds like they're not living up to their name.
What, beekeepers? Yeah, they're not keep, they're bee losers. So something that's, it's part of this phenomenon called CCD, or colony collapse disorder. And that's been a big issue. It's interesting, though, because it was only discovered in, or it was at least formally announced.
Started happening.
In 2006.
Right, started happening then.
A little bit before then, but it was all around that time. So, you know, what was the cause of that? I mean, and so that's sort of been a big mystery. What happens, though, is that basically a significant portion of worker bees die out unexpectedly, and we'll get to those causes. And because the queen bee needs the nectar provided by those worker bees to nurse new bees, ultimately just the entire colony collapses. And so that also means a lot of the livelihoods of some of these beekeepers, unfortunately. Mm. So
it's not just that the worker bees are unionizing and...
revolting.
They're only working 9 to 5.
No, they're actually dying. And so the question is, you know, what caused them to die?
I took the air out of that joke.
Sorry. This is a serious topic. Okay,
I know.
Scientists don't fully understand the cause. So again, it started around 2006. So what happened? So let's try to solve this mystery. And I have a few key points.
Well, let's see. Black Eyed Peas.
Released their album.
Yeah.
No.
No?
No. Cell phones became much more widely used. So that was the first thought, is that maybe cell phones were part of the problem. So everyone was carrying these little electromagnetic transmitters, and cell phone towers were dotting the landscape. And so some thought that maybe the radiation could disorient the bees. I will nix that idea. Researchers say that that is not a role in the colony collapse disorder.
In general, do you remember when everyone was really worried about cell phones? Like, do you remember the show, the movie, Thank You for Smoking?
Uh-huh.
And at the end of it, they like had a cell phone lobbyist. Like, he was also like peddling something that was killing people. It was like a, really an issue people were concerned with.
I mean,
and that concern has, you know, people
kind of dissipated.
I used to when I would put my cell phone in my lap, my mom would be like, "Hey, careful, you're not gonna be able to have kids." And like, I feel like that concern has completely
gone away. Bluetooth headsets and stuff like that. I feel like, I wonder, maybe in the next, you know, couple decades, there'd be more research, and then we'll say, actually, maybe it is a problem.
No, but it doesn't. I think the
gains that we get from them certainly seem to outweigh any losses.
Right, but it's not. I don't even think it's like that. Like cars, that, you know, right? You can, people say that about cars, but like, I don't think people are dying of
cell phone.
All right,
we'll find out. Let's we'll play this back in 20 years and see how right you were. Anyway, the next possibility is that there was a loss of habitat. So basically we have urbanization, and that means a loss of biodiversity even in rural landscapes because of a single crop planting.
Monocultures where they only plant corn, or that they only raise chickens.
And so then basically what happens to the bees is that they're more susceptible to disease because they don't have that diversity in their diet. So that's one possibility. The next one was that maybe it was Frankenplants. Frankenplants being modified plants created by Monsanto that basically produce toxins to repel pests. Hmm. That's how it works. Hmm. So, for example, monarch butterflies were actually heavily impacted by the polluted pollen created by BT corn, which is a special type of corn.
Well, monarch butterflies, didn't they also see some of their habitat get destroyed too?
Yeah, so there was they've been suffering.
It's been a tough
similar
time for the monarchs.
It's been a tough
monarch
time to be
monarch butterflies and queen bees. All the insect
tough time to be a
royalty
bug.
Is in trouble.
Oh yes, okay, I like that categorization. But I will say it doesn't seem like Frankenplants are the main driver here. There is evidence, however, that
Monsanto... This message brought to you by Monsanto.
Yeah, right. That Monsanto's Roundup, the weed killer, might be a problem. This is really recent news. According to new research published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, Roundup actually targets and damages a beneficial enzyme in bee guts, and that actually makes them more susceptible to fatal infections.
Well, and you know what I found out about... Sorry, I hate to go on so many tangents... love to go on so many tangents. But you know what I found about Roundup is that you can often taste it in wine.
Yeah.
Like wine that's where they patrolled the vineyards with Roundup. Like you can actually taste that pesticide, and the pesticide will often taste like rotting wood. I was reading about this last night. And so growers have a problem, even organic growers, if someone's spraying Roundup at the parcel next to their field. There have been these vintners who are buying up the neighboring parcels so they can prevent them from being sprayed with Roundup because they feel like it's impacting the flavor of their... I mean, this is some bad shit, Roundup stuff. Yeah,
actually, and so that's been a huge... I mean, if you think about pesticides, you don't realize how that gets into the supply chain or the food chain specifically and what that does. I mean, so
God,
to the
you
taste...
love supply chains so much.
I love supply chains. Well, I will get to the big... killer of bees, which is something called Varroa destructor. So it's a tiny parasitic mite. It latches onto the larval bee bodies like a tick, and then basically it spread disease and weakens the entire colony. So that's probably the biggest factor here. But for the bees, it's probably like death by 1,000 cuts.
So it's basically a parasite that's killing the bees one by one.
By attaching to larva.
Right.
So that sort of... And as another side note, I mean, this whole thing, we were talking about it being a mystery, but here's where it gets even weirder in terms of colony collapse. So the Varroa destructor, that mite, was introduced to the U.S. in the 1980s. And so why did it take until 2006 for something to actually happen? But then another note is that Australia is one of the few nations in the world that has remained free of that mite so far. And so far, you know, they haven't been having colony collapse disorder.
So is there anything we can do to get rid of the mite?
Well, the thing is that, you know, why would it have taken so long for that to happen in the U.S.? So, right. You know, it doesn't seem like it's completely caused by this mite. And, you know, because Australia also
has... The mite, I have to say, is a very convenient excuse because everything else we have to blame... humans and some those three of your other explanations were like we had to blame humans.
Yeah.
This one's like, no, it's the mite's fault.
Well, I will say humans introduced the mite to the bees in some way. I mean, just through globalization.
I know it's like when you introduce your friend to that guy and you're like, God, you know, he's bad news. Why am I doing this?
Yeah, something along those lines. Anyway, so back to the main story. So on the one hand, you have high demand if you remember what was in your hands, and on the other hand, you have
The whole world?
Short supply.
Because the whole world is in my hands. I'm paying attention. Yes, okay. Short supply. Yes, small supply, big demand, prices going up, no?
Yes. And actually, that's what happened. Honey prices have gone up, but pretty much since 2006, it's a pretty steady climb higher. Although honey prices didn't go as high as you would expect, given the fact that bees were being wiped out at a rate of 30% per year. So what was happening? Why did prices not go up as much as expected? And this is where we get into the sticky world of honey laundering.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So basically, honey is one of the most expensive forms of sugar. But, you know, basically at the end of the day, what is it? It's a opaquish, brownish liquid. And that's it. And so that means that if you add a little bit of corn syrup or maybe some beet to it.
Did you say beet?
Yeah, beet sugar is something you can
add
to it.
It's going to turn red if you add too much.
Yeah, just a little bit. You could increase your profit margins by quite a bit because, you know, per pound honey is the most expensive form of sugar or one of them.
It's like arbitrage. You're putting in something, you're taking something cheap and turning it into something expensive.
Yes, exactly. A little bit of alchemy.
To be fair, I mean, that's what bees do, you know? They take things that are just in the environment and they make into honey. I mean, it is, you know.
Is it honey?
It is honey. That's what people are doing.
Corn,
they're taking
corn syrup.
Things that are
is
hanging
it honey?
Out and they're turning into honey.
Well, so
making it more valuable, just like the bees.
Oh my gosh. Well, according to Michigan State's University's Food Fraud Initiative, honey is the world's third most counterfeited food product.
Now, is that in terms of like the number of products sold or?
By volume is my understanding. Right, okay. And so this gets into what is the first most counterfeited product? Do you want to get into it?
Yeah. Well, so we talked about this in the video episode. I guess one of the two, The one I guessed was olive oil.
Which is actually might be interesting for another knock-on effect, because that is a pretty crazy world going on there, especially with all these fake olive oil products coming up.
Right. And well, and a lot of it's fake. They could say it's extra virgin, but really it's just mere virgin.
Other faked products include Parmesan cheese. Yeah. They add wood pulp to it. That was according to a Bloomberg report recently, a few years ago.
But they found a lot of additives, and you know, one of them maybe was wood pulp. But.
Right. And then ground coffee is another one. There were twigs, stone, barley, and corn husks found to bulk up the product. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, a little bit of corn husk with your coffee. Yum. And so basically what happened was that American production dropped off because, you know, we were losing our honeybees. And China began flooding U.S. markets with honey.
Okay.
But adulterated honey. Mm-hmm. So not the pure stuff. And this is actually fairly serious because, you know, if it's being cut with corn syrup or beet sugar, that's not poisonous, although it is misleading because they are labeling it something that it's not. But if the honey contains something like chloramphenicol, I hope I pronounced that right, chloramphenicol, a powerful antibiotic that can lead to a potentially fatal bone marrow disorder, it's not approved for use in the U.S. It's a common contaminant in adulterated Chinese honey.
Well, you know what? Michelle always says, she tells me to eat honey. She says it has antibiotic properties. So I guess she's right.
Oh, yeah. I guess if you are eating the Chinese honey.
Yeah.
Well, but guess what happened? So honey from China gets banned from the U.S. specifically because of these issues, because of all this like faked and adulterated honey.
Right. So that would make prices go up more.
Well, that's where smuggling comes in. So while the import of Chinese honey is banned, the price difference was big enough that it made it worthwhile for smugglers to relabel it and ship it to the U.S. anyway. So basically, we no longer had honey coming from China, but then mysteriously, we saw a spike in honey imports from Indonesia, Malaysia, India, and even countries with few bees and no record of ever exporting honey. We started getting imports from Singapore and the Bahamas. And then there was also reports of
they let the bees out.
Yeah, of reports of honey being repackaged as a product of Russia, but it was actually from China and being shipped to the U.S. And one German honey distributor did this sort of illegal transshipment for 7 years, and they basically imported $80 million worth of banned Chinese honey before getting caught. And I, this is a quote from the Bloomberg Businessweek report on the story. So the honey often had an odor and a taste similar to sauerkraut. Fan, a worker, was told to mix sugar and syrup into the honey in Taiwan to dull the pungent flavor.
Was it just because like Germans love sauerkraut so much that they
made their honey taste like sauerkraut?
No. I love this.
I thought it was interesting that the German distributor was importing sauerkraut tasting honey. But no,
but maybe
no
every country has their own, you know, kind of thing. Well, like Jamaica imports jerk flavored honey. And
it was tasting like sauerkraut in Taiwan, so it wasn't it wasn't tasting like that in Germany. And we've just it's been headline after headline over the past few years. In 2016, 42 tons of illegal Chinese honey was seized at the port of Miami. Last year, European investigators found fraud on such a large scale that they dubbed it Honeygate, and they had to test all levels of the supply chain. They collected over 2,000 samples. There are entire like labs that specialize in just honey sampling and making sure that this is real honey versus, you know, adulterated honey.
Is that like governments do that or?
Sometimes it's private. There are some government facilities too. And the issue though is that on top of that, there are very little standards. So the USDA created a voluntary grading system that basically lets producers slap grade A, B, or C onto their labels with basically no enforcement. So the formula though scores five specific elements, things like defects, how much moisture, but those grading rules basically skip what I would deem a pretty important factor, which is how much corn syrup or other additives are in this honey. It's a tricky thing because honey is the one ingredient listed. So honey is itself an ingredient. So you don't see like corn syrup and other things right. listed on.
But you just shouldn't be able to like, you should like, so when chocolate is listed on a chocolate bar, for instance, mm-hmm. they'll say chocolate. And then in parentheses, they'll say
what it is. You
know,
yeah.
Cocoa, sugar, milk, blah, 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 blah. So you should just, you should only be able to use the word honey in the ingredients list to refer to actual honey. So you should have to say honey, comma, corn syrup.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is that the FDA, I mean, this has been something that's been brought up time and time again with the FDA. And basically they quote, the FDA shared their quote, concerns about adulterated and misbranded honey, end quote, but they actually deferred to Webster's dictionary for the definition of honey
okay.
And cited it as adequate, which is, quote, a thick, sweet, syrupy substance that bees make as food from the nectar of flowers and store in honeycombs. Now, that to me sounds that's like honey, but apparently you can label something as honey even if it does contain other.
But bees aren't making. If bees don't make, make it, it,
then
ain't
you
honey.
Shouldn't be able to label it honey. Yeah. Well, anyway, back
I mean, let's be.
In terms of grading things A, B, or C, it's a total free for all. So there, we have a quote here from the Federal Register on the USDA, which reads, "Quote: Honey does not require official inspection in order to carry official USDA grade marks, and there are no existing programs that require the official inspection and certification of honey." Basically, at the end of the day, enforcement is completely based on responding to complaints. They're not actually testing this honey ahead of time to make sure it's
which
it's
makes
really
no
honey.
Sense. Why? I mean, why? Do they just? I mean, they don't do that with meat. They don't just say, "Oh yeah, grade A beef, go for
yeah,
it."
Yeah, and that's kind of strange. What's particularly interesting to me is that the more specific and expensive the honey is, the more likely it is to be faked. So one of the world's most coveted honeys is called Manuka. It's produced only in New Zealand and Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It's very popular. And in the UK, 86% of the brands that were tested were faked. Because guess what? You can make more money. I mean, it's where the profit margins are.
Right.
And so if you think you're buying something that's like top of the line, there's a good chance it's been tampered with. Mm. So basically, this entire environment has meant that it's incredibly difficult for US beekeepers to compete. Mm. And while some of them have just gone out of business, others have been able to hold on because of the pollination business. And that is big business.
Okay.
Pollination.
Okay.
So whether it be almonds or apples or coffee, cocoa, those all need bees. Alfalfa hay, which feeds dairy cows,
sure.
That needs bees. So many products need bees. Of the 100 crop species that provide 90% of the food worldwide, okay, so 100 crops provide 90% of the food, 71 are dependent on bee pollination.
Oh.
That's according to the UN. And they say that the pollination business, well, pollination in general, is worth between $37 billion and $91 billion annually. So whether you take the low end or the high end, it's still a huge amount relies specifically on pollination.
Right, and I mean, you know, it's a little weird to put it in dollar terms. Like, if nothing was pollinated, humans and all other animals would mostly just die, right? Like,
yeah, so it is a little strange to put a number on that. But yes, this is basically life.
Yeah.
Depends on pollination.
Yeah.
And so, as I mentioned, almonds are heavily dependent on bees. And every year, there's a call that goes out to beekeepers across the country in the U.S. to bring their hives to California. And they bring their hives to California specifically because the almond orchards, which are heavily concentrated in California, need a huge amount of bees to prosper, to become usable. So basically an acre of almond trees needs two hives. And so every February, 2.5 million colonies, 2.5 million colonies, wow. I just want to stress that, that's yeah. huge. Two-thirds of the commercial honeybee colonies in the U.S. are clustered in just a few California counties. Now, you can imagine that that becomes problematic because guess what? If some of the bees have this mite or some other disease, that suddenly gets spread to all the other bees. And then those bees get shipped back to Maine or wherever they came from. I mean, people drive across the country bringing their bees to California, bring them back, and then that basically
means
that...
You can't just check them on the plane.
No, that means that disease spreads a lot quicker. And right. it's concerning to have such a concentrated supply.
That's cool, though. It's like bee summer camps. Like, hey, what is those letters that you write each other at the end of summer camp every year? It's like... Oh, can't wait to see it. Isn't there like some abbreviation?
Do you
summer camp?
No.
There's like some abbreviation. They're like, all right, see you next summer. Have a good year.
Some of the bees are doing that to each other. Well, actually, this has become like huge source or fodder for thieves. So thieves actually travel to California.
Okay.
And they will steal beehives from the almond orchards. $100,000 worth of beehives were stolen a few years ago. And so this is, I mean, that's an entire livelihood. There's this poor farmer there's a poor beekeeper that I was reading about, and his hive got stolen and he basically lost everything. I mean, that was
his... Do you have insurance? Can you get insurance?
I don't know if there's bee insurance. But anyway, so basically, oh, one more thing. Roger, so our co-worker,
professor.
Yeah. He's our co-worker too. He has a beautiful place in the English countryside.
He certainly does.
And he's been interested in getting into the bee business. And so he was looking at where he could put the bees. And he knew that if he put them near the roadside, they would get stolen because it's such a hot business over there.
Wow.
So he was trying to look for some place where it's a little bit more hidden.
You would think like bees are their own security system.
Yeah, I feel like it is difficult to steal bees. I don't know. I mean,
literally the last thing I would steal.
Yeah.
It's like stealing a grizzly bear. Just come with me.
No. Well, anyway, so over the past decade, prices for pollination services have climbed from $80 to over $200 per hive.
So that summer, that's a $500 million business that... Just that summer camp, bee summer camp
bee
alone.
Bee summer camp is very, very expensive.
Gosh, you remember last summer we were eating all those almond flowers?
Yeah, right. And so basically, as it's become more and more difficult for beekeepers to stay in business and prices for pollination services have climbed, crop growers are now looking for something different. They're looking at robotic bees. So this actually could become big business. This year, Walmart actually filed a patent for robotic bees, technically called pollination drones. And it's cute because they literally are like bee drones.
Drone bees, yeah.
So they're drones.
Actually, you're not supposed to use that term anymore.
Oh, what?
Drone bees. It's considered somewhat offensive.
Oh, it's pejorative?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thanks for keeping us up to date. But these things could potentially... pollinate crops just like real bees. And then researchers at the University of Harvard.
University of Harvard. Yeah, I vaguely recall hearing about that one.
Oh my gosh. I read that backwards. Basically,
you could just say Harvard, you know, people know it's a school.
I know, but I have all these notes I'm so used to saying University of. Anyway, so basically, researchers at Harvard actually introduced robo-bees. And these robo-bees can stick to surfaces, swim underwater, dive in and out of water. And they believe that these...
Commit, like, bioterrorism, probably.
Oh, gosh. Well, the Walmart patent, actually, those... potential bees, drones,
potential bees.
Whatever they are. Okay. I don't know what they are. They are remotely controlled and they have the ability to automatically detect pollen, which is kind of cool. I mean, so these things could one day be on
farm. We have another coworker who can automatically detect pollen.
Yeah. Oh, we have another coworker that has really bad allergies. You're right.
That's a nicer, what I said was a nicer way of putting it.
Yeah, but just to be clear to the audience, because that's something I get that nobody else might. Anyway, so basically the line of thought here is that the health food craze has meant that we see more honey products.
Right.
And increasing demand for those honey products has been fulfilled by China, which has meant that there were a lot of fakes that were coming in the market that put a lot of U.S. beekeepers out of business. That has also pushed up pollination costs. And so now orchards and other crop growers are looking for more robotic bees or other pollination devices.
I mean, can't we say, so I want to make a comparison to,
sure.
You're going to be shocked that I'm going here, but comparison to the world of wine.
Yes.
So there's a horrible, horrible pest, wine pest called Phylloxera, I think it's pronounced, or Phylloxera, mm-hmm. Phylloxera. And it basically destroyed almost every French vine in, I want to say, like the 30s and 40s.
Okay.
Completely decimated the crop. And it's a horrible pest because what it does is it doesn't even eat the whole thing. It's like very rude. It literally just eats in a line down the row, like one bit of the root. So mm-hmm. it severs the root. It's horrible.
Wow.
But so basically what French winemakers had to do was, and a lot of places in Europe, is to take American vines, because Americans have basically taken European vines and started to grow their own, you know, Zinfandel or Cabernet or whatever, and they had to take their and graft their own vines onto the American rootstock.
Wow.
So it took a while for these vines to regrow. Some people claim that French wine isn't the same. Some people claim that wine that's not grafted, like in the state of in Washington State, actually, mm-hmm. that they generally don't graft. Some people claim that that's better. This is all a long way of saying, is there some way that we can help the bees just like the French helped their vines? Are there some kind of bees that are resistant to it? Can we introduce some genetic change into the bees that makes them resistant to the mites?
So some sort of CRISPR genetic change?
Sure.
And this is where it gets tricky, because anytime you're messing with biological systems, it gets very, very messy. I will say, actually, for a final point, there are some private labeling sources that are coming out. So True Source Honey, which is a certified labeling program, is now picking up traction. And it's basically the good housekeeping seal of approval for something like honey. And that sort of is a way to, at least in the private sphere, prevent as widespread honey fraud. But people have to know about it and buy it, rather than relying on, oh, this is grade A, it must be good.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, we'll leave it at that for this week. A little bit of a depressing note, but keep an eye out for robotic mini bees flying
like,
around.
Literally keep an eye out, because, you know, God, like Walmart's tiny drone army, like that just doesn't have a good ring to me.
It's actually, there's a Black Mirror episode that's based on like mini bees that go around and kill people. Something like that. I haven't seen it. I just read about it in the research.
Me neither. Wow. That's what a life Justine has, yeah. By the way. She doesn't even watch popular shows. She's like, have you seen this episode? Me neither, but I was reading about it in research.
I do a lot of reading. Anyway, on that depressing, somewhat depressing note, we'll leave it there. You can catch The Knock-On Effect every Thursday, new episodes at realvision.com/knockoneffect.
Yeah, every week we make a video and we also make a podcast.
Yes.
So don't ask us why.
If you want to watch the video, you should go to that website. You can also go there to sign up for your 14-day free trial.
Yeah, you can get 14 days free of Real Vision. We've had a lot of good stuff on the platform. Really, really good, interesting interview coming out tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Thursday, or probably today, because it's on Friday in most places, or I don't know where I'm going with this, but listen, just there's a lot of good stuff. Check it out.
What's going on Friday?
I guess I can say, Grant Williams is interviewing Kyle Bass about his China thesis, kind of updating us on his China thesis. So,
okay.
Good stuff.
Sounds like a good time to get your free trial. All right, see you guys next Thursday.